researching a subject in technical communication can be different from researching a subject in other areas. Your main source of information may be other people rather than books, so you may have to expand your research skills to include methods such as interviewing and surveying. These methods seek out information that is not published anywhere, nor is it available in document form. Information that you generate that has not been published before is called primary research. Secondary research refers to information that presents the findings of previously published research. If you find articles in the library or online, you're doing secondary research. But if you interview people and report on what they say, you're doing primary research. So this podcast today, this episode, is really trying to give an overview to what we cover in Chapter 3 of A Concise Guide to Technical Communication. My name is Roger Graves, and I'm Professor Emeritus from the University of Alberta and co-author with Heather Graves of The Concise Guide to Technical Communication, which is new from Broadview Press. It'll be out in 2020 in October. For links to the publisher's website and to more resources, visit our website, wecanwrite.ca. Well, let's talk more about researching. When people think about researching, if they think about it at all, they probably think about doing a quick web search, and then they confront the problem of sorting through the several million links that they find. In Chapter 3 of The Concise Guide, we try to get readers to go a bit further than this in the section on secondary research. If you hear the term secondary research, think of books and non-people-based research, that is, research where you don't work more or less directly with people. Working with people is called primary research. This means interviewing people, whether on Zoom, in person, or through an emailed list of questions. Another way of working with people is to give them a survey to fill out. It is less personal than a live interview, but it too will produce information that has not been previously published, and that's what makes it primary. So let's start with the easy one, secondary research. If you're listening to this, you probably did a web search to find it. I'm just going to assume you regularly search the web to find information interesting to you. But one big distinction I want to make is between curated and non-curated sources of information. Libraries provide an important function. They filter information by collecting, preserving, and organizing it. So if you're a student, use the library at your institution. And if I can push you just one step further, let me suggest that you use the chat window on the library website, if there is one. Or perhaps you can email a librarian. Or if you have a question, maybe you could actually go there and talk to a person if you get stuck. They perform an important function, and they're super happy to help you. I've had a lot of really good experiences with librarians. Once you get onto the library website, one of the things you're going to need to do is, one of the things I find do all the time is I get to the databases. I find a database that's associated with the subject matter that I'm interested in. There's engineering ones, there's ones for nursing, ones for medical fields, and so on. So pick the one or find the one that's going to have research articles in your area. And once you've got there, the next thing you're going to have to do is come up with some keywords to search for that are around your topic. So one of your jobs is to sort of find what those keywords are. And a broader web search might help you generate those keywords. But once you've got them, those are the terms that you're going to use or plug in that will then generate the list of sources that are applicable to your topic. Having got that list of sources down to a manageable level, the next issue that you're going to have to face is you're going to be looking at what makes these sources credible or not. That means there's a bunch of criteria you need to look for. Pages 64 and beyond, we talk about this. We talk about how you need to look at who's the publisher of the source. Is it a scholarly book? Is it a journal article? So who puts out that journal? Another question to ask is, do you know who wrote the document? Who's this author? What qualifications do they have? The next question you need to ask yourself is, how current is the document? That is to say, what year was it published in? Sometimes you can tell from a journal, certainly in an abstract, they'll give you information about what evidence they're using or what's the source of their information. Did they conduct interviews? Did they do experiments? Did they perform observations? So how did they get the data that they're going to write from in their article? A little more difficult thing to pick up is on the slant. So can you figure out areas where the writer seems biased in the opinions expressed? Sometimes this really depends on being a member of the academic field and understanding that that journal will always publish articles from a certain perspective and that kind of thing. That's something to keep in mind too. When you're looking more generally at online sources, some of the things you need to consider about credibility are who's sponsoring the website. So I always look for the About tab on a website to figure out who's behind it. If you're reading an article, so who wrote that article? Again, the same question that we have about currency and about how old the article is there a date on it? So how recent is that date? Again, evidence, slant. The final thing with an article or a website that's not part of the university database or college database, it has to do with advertising. Now, if a site's going to have advertising on it, you have to sort of keep that in mind. One of the things that may be going on is that they're putting more sensational kind of information out there in order to get people to look at their site. So they may be exaggerating some of what they know. And that's just something to keep in mind when you're just looking at web-based stuff. So I began talking about online sources and library-type sources because that stuff you may be already familiar with. It's probably unlikely that you've been doing a lot of work with interviewing people. If you have, great. But if that's a new skill for you, we try to talk about how to get ready for that and how to handle that well. The key is to prepare for the interview. Learn in advance everything you can about the subject. Learn in advance as much as you can about the person who you're going to be interviewing. And the third key component is make sure you've got a list of well-organized questions. So here's some tips about how to create some good questions. First of all, make sure you write them down beforehand so that you can sort of check them off as you ask them. You don't want to be getting confused and going back and asking the same question a second time or anything like that. The second thing you want to do is make sure you structure the questions so that you control the interview. And really what that means is you want to start with more general questions and proceed to more specific ones, or start with questions about how to get started with something and then get into more difficult ones. So there has to be some kind of rationale to the order in which you're asking your questions, and it really helps if you can communicate that to the interview subject. Third tip is this: make sure you've got extra questions. They may answer them really super quickly and superficially perhaps, but then you're going to find you're running out of questions. You want to have way more questions than you think you're going to need. And then you'll prioritize your questions maybe by which are the most important questions that your readers or your listeners want to know about. And so maybe those are the questions that you ask first. You want to write good questions. And we go into some detail about how to do that in the chapter, which I can't go over here. It just would take too long. The final part about researching that we talk about in that chapter is how to conduct a good survey. And really what that means is how do you put together some really good questions, which we've just been talking about for the last couple of minutes. One of the key distinctions or things you need to learn is the difference between an open-ended question and a closed-ended question. An open-ended question, here's an example. What was the best advice you got from your academic advisor while you were a student? And what makes that an open-ended question is that there are many, many different answers that you could get to that. The great advantage of open-ended questions is you may get a lot of information that you weren't expecting or couldn't possibly foresee. And the problem with an open-ended question is that, well, it's going to be hard to sort of collate all of that stuff and put it together into a report. It's really, really great information, but it does present a different kind of challenge at the other end when you just try to write this up. Now, a closed-ended question is kind of like the opposite. You can ask a question like, how often did you contact your academic advisor when you were a student? One, never. Two, once or twice. Three, each academic term. They have to pick one of those options, one, two, or three. It's really easy and obvious as to how you handle that data when you're editing it or reporting it in a report. Open-ended and closed-ended questions are going to get you different kinds of information. And you need to have a mix of those things. Most of the questions will probably be closed-ended because too many open-ended questions will give you too much information, too much data to work from as you try to write up your report. Well, in the rest of the chapter, we go over a lot more specific information about how to actually create the survey form itself, different ways to do that, and how to get it out there and get answers to it. I hope you've enjoyed this podcast episode, and I hope you'll take a look at our textbook, A Concise Guide to Technical Communication, available from Broadview Press in October 2020. For links to other information about technical communication and specifically about the Concise Guide to Technical Communication, consult our website, weekendwrite.ca or Broadview Press.